second session of the Community Safety Standing Committee's agenda, and it's my honour and privilege to welcome the National Public Service Commissioner, Dr. Letsile, here today. Thank you very much. We'll ask you to introduce your team in a moment. But before we do that, I'd like to introduce the members of Parliament. My name is Mark Wiley. I'm the chairman. And how the members can introduce themselves.
Good afternoon, good morning still. I'm Dalen Mitchell.
Good morning. I'm Basil Tevido.
Hi, my name is Kurt Leonard.
Good afternoon, Kapil and Christians.
All right, before I ask Dr. Letsile to introduce his team, I just want to say that this is a culmination to a large extent of a fairly long process. As you know, the Western Cape is one of 9 provinces in South Africa, that policing is a national function, that we are dependent in the provinces, in this particular case the Western Cape, on the resources that are trained and supplied by the South African Police Service down to their provinces for the Provincial Commissioner's administration. It has been a contention of this province for a number of years. It's from the time when I was the MEC for policing or community safety in 1999-2000, that this province is under-resourced as far as police numbers are concerned, and that trend has largely continued. In fact, it's now, in our opinion, in a very dire strait currently. For that reason, a number of initiatives were taken by the acting chairperson, Dr. Letsile. The chairperson, Ray Wenger, is on maternity leave at the moment. I spoke to her this morning, and she and the baby are healthy. But on her initiative, a number of steps were taken to try and get to the bottom as to empirically what is the situation as far as policing numbers in this province are concerned, given our deep concern. And by method of using NGOs, by the Kaiser Commission of Inquiry, and asking parliamentary questions, one came to the inescapable impression that we are seriously under-resourced as far as policing is concerned, police resources are concerned in this province, despite the fact that we have very high crime levels according to the police's own crime statistics. On that basis, and I'm saying this primarily for the benefit of the visitors here today, the chairperson then wrote, with the concurrence of this committee, to the Public Service Commissioner, the Provincial Public Service Commissioner, who escalated it to your office. And I want to thank you very much for the work that you have done. And we look forward to your report. We have received your report, and this is a presentation of your report. It is, in many respects, I think, a groundbreaking step where the Public Service Commissioner has been asked to look at this particular aspect, given that constitutionally every citizen and every resident in this country is entitled to a condition of safety, and that is a priority of government to ensure that that takes place. And if that isn't taking place, then we need to know about it, and we need to try and take remedial steps in that regard. So Dr. Letsile, I'm going to ask you to introduce your team, and I'm asking you to do your presentation. I'm not quite sure how long your presentation is. Okay, I see that because you had sent it to us, thank you very much, yesterday evening. I do see that quite a lot of it is stuff that is fairly self-explanatory, you know, extracts from constitution, your mandates and that sort of stuff. So I think I can go through those quite quickly, because I do think we do need to interrogate your submission, your report, please. And we haven't allocated an hour for this sitting, so I think if we could allow half an hour for questions, if it's possible, please. All right, Dr. Letsile, over to you to introduce your team.
Good afternoon, Chairman.
Good afternoon.
Thank you, Chairperson. Before, actually, I continue. I would ask. I've already been introduced. Commissioner Letsile from the National Public Service Commission, and I would like the team that I'm with, each of them, introduce myself.
Thank you, Mr. Chole. Morning, Chairperson and honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. My name is Ngata Mafanya. I'm a Public Service Commissioner resident in the Eastern Cape, but currently I am a caretaker commissioner for the Western Cape ever since Dr. Woods left the commission. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. Chairperson, honourable people. Ronald Erasmus, investigating officer at local Public Service Commission office.
Good morning, Chairperson, everyone present. William Wilkinson, I'm also stationed in the provincial office of the Public Service Commission.
Thank you. Members of the Western Cape Provincial Parliament, especially members of this Standing Committee on Community Safety, officials of the SAPS, if they are present, and the media that is also here with us, non-protocol observed. Thank you for the opportunity, committee, to present the report on the investigation into the Western Cape SAPS personnel problem. I will proceed with the presentation. That is how the presentation is structured. I will start with the introduction, the request, resource allocation methodology, national treasury guidelines on cost of employment, the limitations of this investigation, findings and recommendations which Commissioner Mafanya will present. I won't delve much into who we are as a Public Service Commission, except just to touch on a few areas about ourselves. That is our vision, champion of public service excellence, and our mission includes the investigation, especially the second bullet, investigating, monitoring, evaluating the organization and administration, which actually informed this particular investigation. That is still the mandate. In 1964B, you'll see that it's still the same, the investigating, monitoring, and evaluation, organization, and administration. But over and above that, we propose measures, as we have done in this particular report, in the form of recommendations. The mandate, in this particular instance, F1, which is the investigation and evaluation of application of personnel and public administration practices, and to report to the relevant executive authority and legislature, in this case, this particular legislature. We received, as the chairperson has already said, a request from the chairperson, not the acting chairperson, of the Standing Committee on Community Safety to investigate the under-resourcing of human resources in SAPS within this province. The request indicated that there was the following sort of problem: shortage of police officers, shortages in police stations which were understaffed, the number of vacancies, the fact that the recruitment is insufficient to meet the replacement level, that the ratio of police to national average in terms of the population is below what it's supposed to be, and that this under-resourcing affects moral and health personnel negatively, and that there is a lack of visible policing which leaves the health of care workers exposed to potentially volatile gang activity. And I think another one that was mentioned was the taxi violence. Those were the things that we were supposed to look at. When we got into the investigation, we got to understand that this committee had at one stage invited such national commissioner to brief them on the steps that will be taken to remedy this particular situation, because this problem has been ongoing for quite some time. Out of that particular invite and that meeting, it was established that there has been a decrease in the number of posts from that number, 22,633 to 20,969, that was in 2017 and 18. It was also said there will be further decreases in the number of posts nationally from 194,431 to 191, which is a decrease of 3,000 posts. SAPS was in the process of engaging with National Treasury, that is what they said, in an effort to ensure that budget allocation is maintained over the medium term. I'm sure this particular effort is still ongoing. The police resourcing shortages experienced by the Western Cape, it was found that was not unique to the Western Cape province, and not even unique to the police service. It was also reported that SAPS was making efforts to rationalize and streamline the current staffing level, potentially creating additional funded posts for distribution to the needy areas at the police station. That was that particular meeting. When we started dipping further into exactly how the allocation of posts is undertaken, we found that there was something called the Theoretical Human Resource Requirement Methodology, called the THRR. This is a technology-based model for determining the minimum number and level of posts for police stations, given the minimum standards, and allocate resources on racially neutral basis. However, this determination does not take into account the available resources. It merely looks at, given the resources, what would we have as a province? It simply asks how many policemen and policewomen would be needed to perform all the tasks that each station is required to perform. The determination is calculated at the national level. That is what you've got to understand. But it's largely intended to determine the allocation of resources in the province, and provide guide to the provincial commissioner on how to distribute their resources in the province. It is based on a complex formula. You'll see in the report in 5C, there is all the elements that goes into that IT system to determine whether this police station needs so many police and so many generals and so many colonels and so forth. So some of the variables that get put into that sort of basket is the population size, prevalence of all types of crime, type of station, the size of the area, the number of detectives is based on the number of reported crimes and the assessment of how long detectives would need to actually investigate each type of a crime. In terms of visible policing, that is determined primarily by reported crime rate and the population size. So the population size is also determined by an area that has got squatter camps, which have high volume of population. A post, according to this particular methodology, is provided for every 20 contact crimes and for every 5,000 people. That number is then adjusted by considering environmental sectors, including informal housing, as I've said, and the other things that I've mentioned earlier. The determination of the TRR outcome depends on information supplied by each province to the national office. Once the national SAPS determines the number of posts that each station will in fact receive, provincial commissioners are meant to distribute and allocate resources at a provincial level to give effect, actually, to their province's priorities. However, the provincial commissioners also have these powers, which are limited in that the command structure created by the THRR, which will set the minimum, is of a generic nature. Fixed, and any allocation which derives from this overall structure would constitute irregular expenditure. So for instance, if the THRR said you need 30 police in this particular police station, if the provincial commissioner allocates 31 or 32, that becomes an irregular expenditure. But they can allocate less than that, depending on the budget allocated. It's not possible to fund a police station at a higher level than its grading in terms of TRR. I've already mentioned that. The THRR grading of posts and spell of control cannot be exceeded. I've alluded to that as well. The number of posts generally in the public service are also determined, and lately National Treasury has even issued some directive in this respect and said that all departments are expected to adhere to a set of compensation of employee baseline ceiling. It affects us as well. It affects the entirety of government. That was approved by Cabinet on the 2nd January. The cost of employment based on budget was reduced for 2017 by 10 billion rand for government as a whole and for 15 billion rand for 2018-19 financial year. The reduction is across provincial and national government. Of course, national departments actually have got a larger reduction figure. The expenditure analysis of the SAPS as set out in the appropriation bill, which we looked at, indicates that 77.4%, which is 229 billion of SAPS budget over the MTF period, was allocated to employees. To remain within the cost of employment ceiling, SAPS is planning to reduce the funded establishment by 3,000 posts that I've already mentioned. This reduction would target funded but non-critical posts. I'm sure this is already affecting this particular province. This particular investigation had serious limitations. The first one was the availability of information at SAPS level. We had to use other sources to arrive at the findings. Actually, the annual report of the SAPS provided general program information, which does not specifically deal with province and police station level or even district level information, including the allocation of resources. Efforts were made to obtain information from the Western Cape Provincial Sub-Commissioner regarding the methodology that this particular THRR followed in the Western Cape in the allocation of resources based on the fixed establishment. We were not very lucky with this. We relied on research reports and literature. For example, the calculation of human resource requirements, cluster police stations, satellite police stations, and quarter point. We did a report. We did an investigation in 2011, which became a report of inspection of detective services. We looked at that as well. And then we looked at the report of the Commission of Inquiry into the allegations of police inefficiency that the acting chairperson alluded to in the introduction. And the findings from all of these put together are as follows, and Commissioner Mapanya will present that part. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the team. The first one is...
So, thank you. A gap exists regarding the number of funded posts on the fixed establishment and the number of posts determined by the THRR. Secondly, out of the 22,038 posts approved on the establishment, only 20,604 were filled as at the 31st of March 2015. Thirdly, on the other hand, the current reality is that the financial constraints within the country have an adverse effect on the whole of the public service. Next, departments are expected to adhere to the set compensation baseline ceilings approved by Cabinet on the 13th of January 2016. Needless to say, that the findings that the Commission arrived at were dependent on the information they got from the stakeholders. And as Commissioner Ntuli has indicated, we did not get joy both from the Provincial Commissioner of Police and the National Commissioner of Police in terms of the information he requested from them. But the truth of the matter is he could not stop at that. He had to find other means of getting information, which may approximate what would have been had we received the information from the critical stakeholders, that is the National Police Commissioner as well as the Provincial Commissioner, because those are the people who are supposed to know exactly what is happening within their province of operation. Those are the findings that we came up with. And subsequent to that, the investigator came up with recommendations to address the findings. And the first one was, Section 207, subsection 4 and 5 of the Constitution, 1996, read with Section 12 of the Subs Act, 1995, the Provincial Commissioner Western Cape should draft a plan for presentation to the portfolio committee, or referring to this portfolio committee, on the equitable allocation of resources within the province in line with the allocated budget and the approved establishment. In other words, national, as which a person had indicated, is a national responsibility. But then a budget for the provinces are allocated. But who decides as to how that provincial allocation is to be used is the responsibility of the provincial commissioner. The provincial commissioner then, it is recommended that should come up with a proposed way in which the allocation is to be divided among the province, the different police stations. For example, how much resources is it going to allocate to Khayelitsha? How much to Bonduville? How much to Wynberg? That is his responsibility, obviously, in consultation with the portfolio committee. Secondly, the plan should be submitted to the National Commissioner in terms of the provisions of Section 2075 of the Constitution 1996. In other words, the National Commissioner gets informed of what of the decision that has been taken at this level, the provincial level, as to how the resources are going to be allocated. Next, vacant funded posts that are critical and are not earmarked to be abolished should be filled within a period of 6 months from the date of receipt of this report. That again is the decision of the provincial commissioner, because he's the one who should know which of these posts are critical and which are funded. And we are proposing that those posts should be filled within 6 months of the submission of this report to the commissioning committee, that is the Portfolio Committee for Community Safety. That is our recommendation. Then the National Commissioner should monitor and evaluate the implementation of the Provincial Commissioner's resource allocation plan in order to ensure compliance with the provisions of Section 2074 and 5 of the Constitution 1996, read with Section 12 of the SAPS Act. In other words, you don't simply allocate the resources and don't follow up. You have to monitor whether the resources that have been allocated are being utilized in the manner and in the way that you had requested them. Otherwise, it may be counterproductive. People may do as they please, not in terms of what their plans were. I mean, if you have got a plan, if you develop a plan, you must work the plan. You submit your plan, you get your budget, then your plan, that budget must address the plans that you intended addressing. And finally, feedback on the monitoring and evaluation of the implementation of the Provincial Commissioner's plan should be provided to the Portfolio Committee on a 6-monthly basis by the National Commissioner. And the critical Portfolio Committee for this is this one, because what we are talking about here is the Western Cape, and the Portfolio Committee, yes, the Western Cape, must ensure that what was planned is what is being done. That concludes my presentation at this level, Chairperson.
Thank you, Dr. Lutuli and Mr. Mfanya. For that, I'm going to ask the members if they've got any questions at this stage. Mr. Christians, Ms. Lecker, Mr. Kavita, Mr. Christians.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. What is a bit concerning is that you did not have access to the Provincial Commissioner or National Commissioner. That is disappointing. I don't know if you know what is the next step, because surely there's further information that can help you to look at what the problem really is. You've put in a lot of hard work and you've made some recommendations. I want to know these recommendations, if they did not even want to speak to you or grant you an interview, what are you going to do if these recommendations are just self-decided and nothing is adhered to? Because that's my big concern. The big concern is that you don't have access to the commissioners, provincial and national. And secondly, that you have recommendations now, findings and recommendations. I don't know if it's just wishful thinking, or are you actually going to keep them accountable? We'll do our part, because we've been trying these. It's all discussions, and this was a last resort by the chairperson to do this. And we had the provincial commissioner. We tried everything to get this matter sorted out, but it's very, very, very disappointing to see that not even you could get an interview with the provincial and national commissioner. My question then is, how these recommendations and findings, how are we going to make sure that this is implemented? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Member Leka.
No, thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm looking at the findings. And I want to check in respect of those findings, Chair, on the resource allocation. Western Cape, like any other province, is affected by the shortage of the personnel, or rather the strength within the police station is not as what it's supposed to be. And in your interrogation on the THRR as the scientific methodology, would you make a different recommendation instead of this THRR in the methodology? And if that's the case, to what extent would you go in terms of recommending a method that will best suit the police? The second part, Chair, is on the recommendations that were made. You see, part of the recommendations talks to the Constitution of the Republic. And if you read the Constitution of a Republic together with the Sub-Act, it seeks to explain or give relief to communities that they will live in a society where they will feel safe and secure. And therefore, I want to understand, based on the first question on the THRR, would you recommend that maybe the ratio of a police versus to a number of community members be something that could be changed? But also looking at whether the deviation, not only in the Western Cape in terms of the police ratio, is there a national instruction that informs the provincial commissioner to kind of deviate when necessary? And I'm also concerned with the filling of vacancies. Besides the 6 months, what is on record in terms of expediting the filling of vacancies? Thank you, sir.
And then we will ask the answers, and then I'll ask some questions with Mr. Mitchell.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thank you very much for the presentation. My question is on THRR, where the establishment of posts are being done in Pretoria. It's being, the devolution takes place. It's being sent to the Western Cape Police Commissioner as a guideline. It's a methodological issue that I'm actually trying to touch on. Now he gets the guideline in terms of how he's going to dispatch and also distribute the resources in terms of needs and priorities. Now I just wanted to know how he... are these needs and priorities captured in his methodology? Because after numerous requests from you, he never came up, and his department came up with a response. I think that's what is a no, a clear note, and the signal was sent out to you in clear terms. And I just wanted to know, why did you follow the route of a desktop research in order to gain the statistics? I know perhaps out of desperation, etc., but why not demand, in terms of his incumbency, he's obliged to supply you with the statistics? If you can just answer me on that one. And the final one is visible policing. A visible policing being determined by reported crimes. To my mind, visible policing is actually more preventative than curative. Should there first be a crime committed before visible police are being dispatched? Or should we have visible policing even in areas where there are no crime committed as a deterrent for would-be criminals? Thank you so much, Chair.
All right, Commissioner, can I ask that you answer those, try and address those initial questions, and then I want to do a second round. Thank you.
The first one, concern.
Thank you. The concern in terms of access and about the recommendations. The recommendations are not wishful thinking. The recommendations are based on what's in the Constitution, which includes the role that this committee should play, the role of the provincial commissioner, and the role of the national commissioner. All of them working together should be able to deal with this particular problem. This role is both constitutional and legislative. And I think with those kinds of instruments, it is not that difficult to actually stamp down your authority and say it's going to happen this particular way. Probably it does happen that people are not aware of the powers that they have. And there is this thinking that we can do this, we can try that, and it's seen as innovation. When in this particular instance, no innovation is required. The Constitution requires this, and if you don't do it, then you acted against the Constitution, against the legislation that has put you there. Actually, you even have a role as this particular committee to actually deal with the employment and actually the disciplining of a provincial commissioner should they not abide by what is policing issues in this particular province. So,
can I add, Chairperson, now in terms of your accountability, this is the committee to which the provincial commissioner should account to. We as the Public Service Commission were commissioned by your good selves to do the investigation. We have done the investigation, we have made our findings, and we have even indicated our limitations. What is going to happen to our report, our findings, our recommendation? It is a responsibility of this committee. We provide information on the basis of which the committee has to act. We simply make recommendations, come up with remedial action if there are any, but implementation of those, it is the portfolio committee that has to ensure that this happens on the basis of what we have discovered. We did not get joy, and we have learned that you also did not get joy from the provincial commissioner. But you have got you have got the powers to call the commissioner to account in terms of the constitution. It's not just because it is not through your own liking. It is a constitutional mandate that he must account to this committee. And if then he does not account to this committee, then this committee is the responsibility of this committee to see what else to do. It can be the responsibility of the commission. The commission has provided information. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Commissioner Mafanya. In terms of the question on the resource allocation and the THRR, the THRR seemingly to even, there is a lady that tried to assist us from head office. She's Davi. I'll tell you her name. Colonel Teresa Duki. Yes. She tried to explain how that works. Apparently, it's it was even complicated for her to explain the thing because it's got the mathematical formulas in it. It requires technical explanation. But in broad terms, it assists in determining what is the shortest way to this and what is the best way to this. It also able to determine the maximum and the parameters within which provincial commissioners can allocate within. So in that instance, yes, it is a particular useful tool for determining those particular parameters. As for understanding what exactly gets into it and what comes out of that, it's a little bit intricate. It's an exercise that will be a little bit difficult for anyone, for most of us to deal with. It acts, as it is said, as a guideline, still acts as a guideline. Despite the difficulty in understanding it, it assists in guiding provincial commissioners and even the national commissioner. There's the ratio and the changing or deviation from those particular ratios. Yes, ratios change and the deviations for ratios depending on what those ratios were based on. In one time, there will be a requirement for more policing in this particular area because of the ratio of crime to the number of police. But over time, that changes. And sometimes crime moves to somewhere else. So ratios are constantly on the move. Yes, there may be a need to change ratio, but things like ratios need to be reconsidered after a period of 3 years, 5 years, and so forth to see if they are still relevant. We don't know how long they've been in place, and we did not look at when those ratios were put in place. Yes. Yes, there may be a need to deviate, but the provincial commissioner has got that authority to say, seemingly this particular ratio is not working for this particular police station, I will reallocate. And if this committee has a problem with that, or someone else, and it comes to the attention of this committee, you can challenge that. The feeling of vacancies currently in the public service in terms of national treasury, non-critical posts are not supposed to be filled. However, if it's a critical post, it has got to be filled because it's a critical post. The Department of Public Service and Administration has tried to come up with a period within which that can be done, but departments can fill those positions in a month's time, in 2 months' time. They don't have to wait for the 6 months or the 12 months. It depends on the department, because policing itself is one particular area that is very important for the safety of people. I believe, and the commission believes that critical position within the police needs to be filled as urgently as it can be done. Why we followed a desktop research? No, we did not specifically follow a desktop research. We went to your head office to interview, for instance, this particular lady. We did ask the provincial commissioner, as the investigation progresses, one tends to identify the people that needs to be to actually be interviewed, depending on a particular need. That's how an investigation goes. You don't have to treat it like research. Research is something else. But in investigation, you identify individuals that are critical. We identify them as critical. We approached him, but the letter that we gave to him, he submitted it to head office instead. Yeah, and it didn't come to us for whatever reason. So that is what happened. And in terms of visible policing, yes, I agree that it should not be based on reported crime only, because it can also act as a deterrent. There needs to be a look at both acting as a deterrent and reported crime. Where crime is high, you need police for visibility. Where there is a lot of, for instance, in the Western Cape, there is a lot of visitors from overseas, tourists and so forth, you need visible policing there. You do need not wait for crime to happen. So both these elements are important in terms of visible policing. I don't know if, Commissioner, you want to say something.
Yes, Chair, thanks. You know, it's true. People want to feel safe and secure wherever they are, and that is a prerogative. It's a constitutional imperative, let me put it that way. We do know that in a number of cases, police work tends to be reactive. They move when a crime has happened. But the truth of the matter is, one of the responsibilities of the police is to make all attempts to prevent crime from happening. Hence, there is a crime prevention strategy that should be embarked on, because it's not good enough to address my case when I'm dead. You know, no one wants to have a dead body in their yard. Prevention, as they say, is better than cure. But the truth of the matter is, in the majority of cases, police work by its nature tends to be reactive. Police tend to react to what has been reported to them. Fine, that's part of their responsibilities, but crime prevention, for me, is critical. And you cannot do this without people who are properly trained to do it. You can't do this without bringing on board the members of the community who are affected by crime, because criminals don't stay in police stations. They stay in the communities where we live. Some of them we know, but we don't want to report, you know, for whatever reason. You know, there could be reasons, justifiable reason or unjustifiable. But the truth of the matter is, we should be, as members of the community, be involved in our own policy. Thanks, Mr. President.
Thank you.
Mr.
Mitchell?
Chair, I don't want to rehash what's already been asked in the interest of time, but I just, firstly, let me welcome the presentation and in the chairperson's absence, say, you know, we got to this point after frustration. The reality is, and I want to touch on the under-resourcing with a direct focus on a police station that we as a committee visited. And we visited the Para police station a couple of months ago as a committee, and there's posts that has been vacant for 5 years, 30 odd posts that has been vacant for 5 years. Now, are we at that point, or are we at a point where we're saying, you know what, the police budget nationally is increasing, because that's a fact, that is increasing. Are we protecting the politicians, or are we protecting the communities? Because everything else other than the on-the-ground visible policing, which has been alluded to by many around this table, is suffering, or is decreasing, and VIP protection is increasing. So Chair, I think we're at a point now where, I mean, we can no longer accept that there's a shortage of staff purely because of budget, because quite frankly, it's not the truth. Factually, it's not the truth, because the budget increases. Then I just want to, under slide number 10, where you speak of where the THRR is being explained, the scientific methodology of the allocation of human resources is done on contact crimes and, but the grading of a particular police station can never change. So where does the grading of a police station comes in if those things because those things don't stay the same. So contact lines in a particular area might change on an annual basis, but the grading of a police station where the allocation happens remains as a fixed structure or a fixed component to the compilation of resources. And then with the distribution, so and I just want to understand for my own sake, if a distribution of resources happens at a provincial level, right, the allocation of the initial fixed structure is allocated by national based on a report submitted by the provincial structure. How does those two match, or how does it interlink? Because we on the one side of the police access that the provincial commissioner can reallocate, but the other section says that he gets allocated from national by a submission. So surely the submission would be how he would reallocate. So they just feel that there's a gap between the two. So I just want to leave it at that for now. Thank you, Chair.
All right. I'm going to ask a couple of questions, if you don't mind. And I, Dr. Latuli, from the outset, I want to say to you that although some of my comments are going to be fairly critical of this report, I do so with hopefully with some level of humility and also a lot of knowledge behind me. In 2000, I was invited by President Mandela to go and brief him and his top structure, and I sat from here to where you are away from the President at the time. And Commissioner Eloff was the head of human resources in the police at the time. And he also came up with this theoretical model. And I told the President that this is a theoretical scientific model and it isn't based on reality on the ground. And my criticism of this report is that there are two primary indicators with regard to your policing model at the base level, which is station level. The public only see the police officers 90% of the time at station level, your visible policing, your patrolling officers, your first responders to crime. That is where policing and the intent of the Constitution to keep the public safe happens, at that ground level. And with regard to detective work, the following up of when a crime has been committed. And if you'd used, just in the Western Cape's case, the census to show that the Western Cape and Gauteng are the two provinces that are showing dramatic increases in population, we're currently sitting at about a 30% increase in population every 10 years. We have doubled our population since the time that I was in 2000. And the other one is crime. The crime statistics over the last 5 years will indicate that the Western Cape has significantly increased its crime statistics in your contact crimes, most specifically in murder. It still leads by a country mile. It's drug-related offences. In fact, I think you can put all other 8 provinces and put their totals together and it will be less than the drug offences in the drug-related offences in the Western Cape. Just use those two barometers and I think that you would have come to a dramatically different set of recommendations. Because, as the members have said, this is a culmination of a long path of frustration in the Western Cape. We have a lot of people are dying on a regular basis. In my local police station in Ocean View, I think we've had in the last 3 years a spike in murders, in gang-related murders, that actually scuffed the nicks. I mean, we had between 40, 50 people are murdered in that small police station there, and yet they have a vacancy in the visible policing head and a vacancy in the crime intelligence head. And we could go through a lot of stations. And I would like to know, what force and effect do your recommendations have? Because the recommendations that you've made are exactly the same recommendations that were made in the legal opinion, in the legal document that was again sent as which was part of your attachments. And that was the Social Justice Coalition, the Equal Education and Younger Community Police Forum, took the Minister of Police, the National Commissioner, the Western Cape Police Commissioner, and the Minister of Community Safety to to the court, and they came out with a there was a lot of recommendations there. The recommendations they made there were that they were that the almost identical to your recommendations as far as timelines are concerned. And what worries me is that we are playing footsie-footsie with people's lives. I cannot stress enough, for those of us as public representatives that actually go to crime scenes, and I go to a lot of them, and it is the most horrendous thing to go there, and especially you see kids lying on the ground that have been shot as collateral damage as a result of gang violence, and it is dramatic at the moment. I just want to ask, for instance, I had Commissioner Piecha in front of the committee. It's the first time a national commissioner has appeared in front of a provincial legislature a number of years ago. And one of the questions, the pre-prepared questions we asked of her, what is the minimum service level of police that the public can expect from the South African Police Service? And she put up a slide. It's there. It's a matter of record in Hansard. She said in a sector police station, in each sector, you can, the public can expect two vehicles with two persons in each vehicle 24/7. So that's two vehicles, that's four people per sector 24/7, and four people in the charge office. I asked General Brunt, who may I say General Brunt has just has just been approved by this committee as being our next police ombudsman. He's a serving police officer, a highly professional police officer. He's leaving the police service. His current posting at the moment, he's the cluster commander for Mitchell's Plain, which includes Khayelitsha, and the acting cluster commander for the Wynberg cluster. So under a single police staff officer falls two-thirds of the population of the city, the metro of Cape Town, under a single officer. Why have those posts not been filled? Why is it possible that those posts have not been filled? And I want to come in defense, if I may, of General Julia, the Provincial Police Commissioner. He passed those documents without answering them because he can't answer them. He is beholden to the National Commissioner. He gets given an X amount of police officers who have to be recruited and trained at the National Commissioner's office, and they get devolved down to the Provincial Commissioner's office, and he then cuts that cake according to his policing plan. But if they only give him half of a team, that's all he has to deploy. Currently what they're doing at the moment is they, to a sop to the public sentiment, is they're simply going and they bring about combat teams. So now we've got a couple of combat teams out in the field at the moment. 269 have been sent down, apparently from other provinces, although I've visited those places. They're drawing them from local police stations as well. So they're not actually people additional to the Western Cape. And another 120 were appointed last week by the National Minister for Nyanga. Well, you take those two additional specialist policing components, it's still only 20% of the vacancies in the Western Cape. So this is putting a very weak, small plaster on a massive bleeding wound. And I would like to ask of you, Dr. Luthuli, whether you wouldn't consider doing an addendum to your report, taking those two components that I asked of you, that I mentioned to you. One is the dramatic increase in the population growth in the Western Cape, and secondly, a review of the national crime statistics, because those are the two key pillars upon which the policing plan, the policing population density per population is determined. There's been a dramatic increase in the Western Cape and Gauteng, and Gauteng geographically is about the size of a postage stamp, whereas the Western Cape is geographically a very extended province. There has been a dramatic increase in population density, in other words, inflow of population into the Western Cape and Gauteng. Other provinces, I don't know whether you know it, Commissioner from the Eastern Cape, I don't know whether you know it, but they're currently on the basis of the census projections. The Western Cape now has a greater population than the Eastern Cape, which always was the other way around. So, and yet it would be interesting to know what the popular police density is in the Eastern Cape versus the Western Cape at the moment. So I just would ask Commissioner, whether you would not consider doing an addendum using those two specific benchmarks, which are benchmarks which determine the policing resource plan, whether you wouldn't take it into account. But just what there's one, just one last thing that I'd like to ask of you. Yeah, sorry. The population density. The other one is the another key barometer to the theoretical exercise, and that is crime statistics. So if you take the crime statistics of the Western Cape versus the other, they actually, in crime statistics, when they release them, they actually give them a ranking exercise. They give them a ranking. I mean, the Western Cape ranks number one, number two, or number three in virtually every crime, in every crime category. So on that basis alone, there should be a propensity of putting more policing resources into the Western Cape.
Would it not be possible, Chairperson, to put this request in writing? Because Commissioner Thuli has to ask for permission from the Chairperson of the Public Service Commission to go ahead. It's democratic. It's bureaucratic. But that's how things are. He has to go via that route.
The letter's in the post.
Thank you.
When the fact that we posted the presentation for 5 years, so it is news to us. It should not be like. Oh, there, thank you. And it should not be like that, provided that is a critical post. Because if a post is vacant for 5 years, the other question that comes up is, do we need that post or not? Why doesn't their department abolish that particular post? Because if it has existed for so long, why has it been allowed to exist for so long? I would understand that as posts become vacant, even if there is a time lapse from within, they can be filled whilst waiting for a budget. Sometimes we say when we're waiting for budget, we're waiting for the incoming budget so that we can do this and that and that and that. But if for budget after budget the post was not considered, there's something wrong with that. Yes, there is a gap. We did acknowledge that there is a gap between national allocation and what the provincial commissioner could do. That is the role of management, not only in human resources, in all other resources, to determine what can be done with this amount of resources, called prioritization, unless there is over-prioritization and the resources are such that very little or nothing can be done, then we can consider that. Those are my comments, Chairperson. Thank you.
Hey, Chairperson, you know, some of these questions could have been gone into further if the Provincial Commissioner had provided the information that was requested from him. Because surely he would have explained what you have just said to us, that there are these critical posts which I cannot fill. And if they are critical, why have they not been filled? Because what we get from New National is that there is room for the filling of all critical posts. And critical posts are critical. But unfortunately, if we're not getting joy from the person, we should be getting support from your good selves. You're also not getting joy from him. Then I've got a problem with the way the person operates. Thanks, sir.
Again, I must defend General Juna. He has always been available for this committee. I think it is personally my interaction with him. He's a highly professional officer. But his hands are bound because his capacity to be able to do things is dependent upon what flows down the tube from the national. I do think, obviously, he should have responded and not just booted it upstairs, but the fact of the matter is that his hands, in many respects, is completely
what is should be of concern to every South African is the planned decline of policing in South Africa. There is a planned decline. It was already pointed out to you. And I'm aware, I've been told, that there's 2,500 resignations waiting for processing in the Western Cape for this thing. So the natural attrition alone is way ahead of the natural inflow, in other words, the training cycles. But the attrition is based not just on death, resignations, firings, and things like that. It's based on, like, for instance, a person like General Brunt, a 30 years service, outstanding professional police officer, needing the service. Can't afford to have that loss of expertise. A rank constable coming in at the bottom is all very well, but he needs to come into a system that is stable, that is going to pass on mentorship onto you, and that is a problem. All right, members, I think we spoke a little more than I should have, but I think if we've canvassed this a lot. Dr. Letuli, to you, Commissioner Fania, thank you very much, and to you, the rest of your commissioners from the Western Cape. I hope now that we've met each other, we can probably make use of your offices more frequently. Hopefully you're going to get a new commissioner shortly. Okay. Doctor, to you and your team, thank you very much, and for those of you who traveled, travel safe. Okay, the committee could just hang back with you.